Welcome to the crazy train. You've never seen magic like mine that can bless a shield ride. I am the Titan Master.
Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
Elmer, lighten it up. I did not.
Lighten it up.
I didn't realize he was that ripping. That was unbelievable.
Oh, man.
There was some Randy Chodes.
Randy lit. Rhodes.
Anyway.
Loading the Toad Rhodes.
Loading the Toad Rhodes. He was just. It was unbelievable.
Man,
Elmer's
that's some good stuff.
Exceptional musician. Very excited. So that was good stuff. Well, happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Festivus for the rest of it.
Happy New Year,
Jay.
Absolutely.
I need to ask you, and I don't want to offend you. And listeners at home, please don't be offended. Are you a happy Honda Days or a Toyota Thon?
Yeah, no kidding, right? Wow. I watched some serious football last couple weekends, and we were commenting on that about
like
this.
Happy Honda Days, Toyota-thon. That's it.
And then Lexus-a-thon and Chevy-orama.
What does your family celebrate? Whoa. Hello.
Let's go get a new vehicle.
I watched plenty of football last week. Obviously, the holiday hit right in the spot where, like, we'll just take a week there. It was so freaking cold. I think it was cold everywhere. It was ridiculous. And we said, let's just chill out. New Year, so happy New Year there. You know, enjoy your Toyota-thon holiday, whatever it was, whatever your family celebrates. No offense, right?
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. Exactly.
Toyota-thon. You know, it's whatever. Not here to judge. Whatever. I don't know what Hyundai does, but we might celebrate that here.
Oh, they had a series of commercials too. Yep. You know, not to be excluded.
They got Jody Michael with that El Camino, I'll tell you that much.
She doesn't have an El Camino.
Whatever that thing is.
She's got the current El Camino version. Don't tell her I said that. Probably never hear the end of it.
My wife cut herself a mullet and went and bought this Hyundai El Camino.
Hello.
It came, that's good. It came with a 38 special tape, Jay.
So. Yeah. It's got an 8-track in there.
8-track blast and hold on loosely.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
So there's that. You got that going for you. What'd you get for Christmas, Jay?
A few good things. My mom got me a pack of colored markers, and I'm like, oh,
you sniffing them or what?
Thanks. No, she goes, well, Steve said that Jay likes to draw on the podcast. I said, he said that? She goes, yeah, I don't remember that. And apparently my mom heard her, or my dad passed it on to my mom, so she got me some colored pens so I can draw. I thought that was
pretty
sweet.
I can imagine that interaction. Your dad's like, listen, our son's into that drawing stuff.
Yep. I draw little horses and stuff sometimes when I'm bored. Jay's
their creative type, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Got you some collared pins.
Yep.
Dang.
Yep. Yep. Wow, you got some awesome new socks.
Got some. Oh my goodness! You had to. I'm gonna rock those when we're filming this summer. It's gonna be epic.
Cool.
That is gonna be my go-to sock.
That was my intention.
I might have you order 30, 40 more pairs so I can just wear them daily. I got some. Jay got me some socks with Jay's face on them. They're kind of amazing. I have a.
Yeah, it's like polka dots. You know, they're black with polka dots, but it's my face, and it says Jaybird along the top.
It's pretty epic. Yeah, well, the thing is this. I have a pretty strong sock game, to be honest with you. It's like
I know
I got a problem, Jay. Four things actually. I'm thinking of things that I hoard. Musky equipment is just, you know, the bait cave's full, whatever. Cool guitars, badass watches, right?
Yeah,
got a new one for Christmas, by the way.
Me too.
And guitars. Did I start to say guitars? Yeah, I did. And then watches. Socks and shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Socks and shoes. That's what I was
going. Nothing wrong with that.
I like weird socks and I like weird shoes. Jay hit the home run with the Jaybird socks. They're kind of amazing there. Sorry. I don't know. I know why I'm crawling down that rabbit hole this fast because it's the day after New Year's Eve. And I had to have a Pepsi about 2 o'clock today just to write things, Jay.
Just to
straighten the ship out, you know. You got to get your keel in the water, if you know what I mean. So
sure,
you know, it's that deal anyway. It is freezing cold. Actually, it's not. It's a lot of places. I actually just got off the phone with Elmer where he did that intro, but cold up there. Fishing's good in the south. You know, we'll cover some more of that here shortly. Saving that fun southern stuff for when we get into the midst of nothing left to do. Nothing left to talk about.
Yeah.
But other than
that. Well, it's already January.
It's January. We're in that. Hey, speaking of, guess what comes out here shortly, Jay?
Tell me.
The Musky Shop catalog.
Yeah, I know.
Whoa.
Yep.
Yee.
Did I send a draft copy to Jody?
So,
did you see?
Oh, go ahead. I've seen
it. I did.
Okay. But
it's coming along.
Are we ready? I'm just going to come out with the big league, big boy, major league announcement.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
All right. Hello. Two things. Number one. So, Musky Shop Bash, we got the usual suspects. Herbeck's going to be there. I'll be there.
Bingo.
The Smitties, yes. Joe Booker.
Awesome.
Cool. We got a guy from Canada that's probably coming. It's a special guest. I've not even told you that. I just found that out today.
Okay. Right?
Like a big, big deal Canadian. But pulled some strings, Jay. Just pulled some strings and got maybe the coolest guest that you could sit and talk to and shake hands with, which is Randy Howe, the winner of the Bassmasters Classic. The biggest tournament in all of fishing. Now you go, how does that pertain? Fishing is fishing, and this guy is a structure fishing genius.
That's what they say.
Right? He is going to do a seminar at the Bash. You're going to be able to press the flesh, talk to this dude who is, I don't care if you're crappie fishing, you're bass fishing up north, you're a musky guy, I don't care what you fish for. This guy knows his stuff. So we're going to have him at the Bash. He's going to do a seminar. You're going to be able to meet Randy Howe, which is just crazy. I mean, you talk about the Super Bowl of fishing.
Yep.
We're talking about one of the goats. You know, it's just like it is what it is. I don't care what it is. He fishes for muskies. He fishes for everything. I mean, he makes his living bass fishing on these tournaments where he's multiple millions of dollars in tournament winning. If you're looking to up your game, that's a dude you got to listen to.
Yeah.
Because
I'm looking forward to that.
Targeting, you know, he is a crankbait aficionado and a structure fisherman where it becomes, this is where actively feeding fish are. And I talked to him, his seminar, his whole thing at the Bash is going to be really focused on how to catch more and bigger fish.
Okay.
That's it. I don't care what species. So if you're a smallmouth guy or you're more focused on bass and you like muskies on the side, which nobody that listens to this stupid podcast does, but in general, it's going to be a heck of a seminar where you just go, this is killer. Now, number two, Jay, we have joked for years about a Muskie 360 after party.
Yep.
It's happening, folks.
Mm-hmm.
A legit after party. We got a venue. Joe Booker and the Top Raiders are going to be there. Special opening act TBA at this point. So,
super group.
We just got to figure out what the name is.
Okay. That's not going to be too hard.
No. Jay might get
logistically,
up
there. That'll be the easiest part. Oh, I'm getting up.
Let's just for argument's sake, let's just say it's Joe Booker and the Top Raiders, Stephen Paul and the Bottom Raiders as the opening act. So we're going to do a little get together. A Muskie 360 after party after the bash. So you're going to have the bash. It's going to be ridiculous. And then we're going to get somewhere where there is Pepsi and there is a stage and there is fun. Yep. What do you think, Jay? That's a heck of a day, isn't it?
It is. It's going to be great. Looking forward to both bands playing and it's going to be a rocking good time.
We're going to have a hoot, man. And like I said, the guys at Livingston are gonna help us with the after party. They're gonna, you know, probably do a promo where you can, you know, you come to the after party, get a bait or something like that or whatever. But dude, every year we do the bash and everybody's like, what are we doing after? And everybody's like, oh, there's nothing. It's happening. It's happening.
It's gonna be all day spectacular.
Ridiculous. Jace is listening to this going, really? I have to run PA for like 15 hours now. Thanks. Well, thank you, Jace. You've been conscripted. We'll talk to you soon.
Put them to work.
Put them to work, folks. But no, we're going to do a straight up Muskie 360 after party. We will try. I'm going to do some different fun stuff. We will legitimately try to do at least 30 minutes of DJ Tommy Fresh in between bands. What do you think, Jay?
Good idea.
Can we just get Tom to stand there and he just moves?
He's like, yeah.
But any idea?
Get a little turntable.
Yeah, just one turntable, like something from Walmart. But yeah, we're going to have the real after party. Book Daddy, me and him are talking about it. It's the Muskie 360 after party. So is the Muskie Shop Bash. The after party is a Muskie 360 event. And we'll tell you when and where and all that stuff. But it'll be pretty close after the bash, so we'll give everybody
It's July 15th.
It's July 15th, but we're as far as times and everything, and it'll be probably right there across from the shop. But we'll work out all that. And just to clarify, the bash is a Muskie Shop event. The after party is a Muskie 360 event. Right?
So got it.
There you go. So when you hear that Jay Bird's gonna go in there and cut a rug and get wild, What Tom Petty song are you gonna play, Jay?
Several.
Several. I can guarantee that it's going to be ridiculous. So that's going to be a hoot. July 15th. Mark your calendar. So just like last year, I'll be up there beforehand. Jay, we're filming. I think we're doing the typical thing we're doing.
Yep, and we're going to be filming. Yeah, I imagine you're coming up a week beforehand.
Yeah, so something like that.
Sometime in the water before the bash and all that.
You know, so we're going to look at the calendar. You guys, I've had a bunch of people hit the water with me when I'm up there. It's fun. Let me know. We're working on the schedule now. If that's something that sounds like it's going to work out for you, let's do it. July 15th, mark your calendar. So the bash is all day long. What did we start at last year, Jay? What time? Like 11, I think?
I think it was noon, actually.
Okay, noon. So the bash
will be around there,
yeah,
probably.
Start noonish, somewhere in that time. Do that. There'll be a dinner break, and there will be a ripping after party. The venue, we're working on it. We got it figured out, but it's right there by the Muskie Shop. And so that's going to be a hoot. If you want to come out, have a Pepsi, shake hands with Joe Booker, buy Jay a Pepsi, buy me five or six, buy Booker one. Yep. You know, we're just going to have a good old-fashioned hoot-nan.
Mm-hmm.
A hoot-nan.
Yep.
Special appearances.
I should be working with, special appearances. I mean,
from
we got
Ricky Bobo will be there. Well, he's going to play Jug.
Oh, is he coming?
Yeah.
All the way from West Virginia, right?
I've not talked to him about it, but he'll bring a jug, guaranteed. That's the best guess we got, folks. Just a guy playing. That's it.
Funny.
Other than that, guys, the other cool thing that's going on, Toothy Tough just sent us something you've never seen. Whoa.
Please tell me more about it.
Hey-oh. It is the Triple Threat. It is the Toothy Tough with some extra toothy toughness added. And if you've not seen them, check it out on the site. It's a three-tail Toothy Tough. It's very cool. Really, really limber action with these baits. They got a lot of flow. And if you guys have fished one of these, you know what I'm talking about. So it's a cool addition. There's not a lot of new stuff coming out this time of year. But we're about there, Jay. We're about to that weird time of the year where all the new stuff starts rolling up. Any rumors or rumors of rumors?
Well, the new Slammer Fatty might be in this week.
Nice.
It's called a Fatty Minnow. It's a 6-inch round body with a square lip. And you might remember in a past podcast, Steve and I talked about that thing. And we lit him up on the first day trying it. So that's going to be a great one. And I know a few other people that have used it with great success. And there's some building anticipation for that one.
Those are killer.
You know, from a distance, you look and you're like, it's another minnow bait. But this thing, you know what I mean?
It's got a vibe, man. It's a really fat action. I like that thing.
Yep.
I like it. I like it a lot.
High vibration.
I like it a lot.
So that might be out by Friday.
Got that.
Just check out the website. Leave your email in the Notify Me app under the listing for that.
And
it's right on the homepage.
Right next to it, the Titan Junior boys.
Titan Junior. It's not going to be that long to wait for that either.
No, very soon. And then the cool thing with that is we will have, I believe, Jay, cutting it close. All the color samples come in, so we will have pictures of all the new Titan colors here.
That's good, because I need to finish the catalog in a couple
that's
days.
That's why I said that, yeah. Should have told you that ahead of time. Anyway.
Thank you.
Hello. Anyway. Man, other than that,
Loopy.
Yeah, I mean, you can say Loopy. Loopy's a way to put it.
Oh,
Loopy,
man.
He says. Yes, officer, I'm Loopy.
Hey, it's January already. Did I already say that?
I don't know. Is it?
I'm glad.
Other than that, the only cool thing that I'm aware of, and I'm stoked about it, is the cool sale we're doing at the Muskie Shop coming up. Can't tell you the details on it, but it's going to be really neat.
We got a bunch of stuff coming up, Steve, that you probably don't know about, but the one you do. We're gonna
I know
have a mystery.
It all, baby.
We have a mystery gift special coming out. I'm planning on probably Friday kicking that bad boy in. I already shot a video with the man, the myth, the legend, Big Elmer. Kind of a cute little video with me and Elmer talking about, hey, Elmer, did you hear what's happening? You know, one of those type deals. And, you know, Elmer's references to fine pastry goods, you know, it's all good. It's funny stuff. And but anyway, yeah, we got a sale coming up on that. And we're going to run that all month until we run out of free things that we're giving away. But, it's free
stuff.
Don't
tell all the details yet. You're just rambling.
Well, we're not sure about the details yet, Steve. But,
that's the problem.
Yeah. The boss is gone. Yeah. So when the boss gets back, we'll pull the trigger on that.
But,
We got other sales coming this month, too. Keep your eyes open.
Fun stuff. Anyway, it's the new year. It wouldn't be the new year if there wasn't a Festivus bitch session, Jay.
Really?
Really.
Is that what you do?
That's what I do.
Bring it on.
So, I sort of thought about it when, listen, it's a new year. What are three things? I'll tell you mine if you got any. What are three things I don't want to hear about regarding muskie fishing in the new year?
Right? You don't want to hear about.
Don't
want
to hear about it. I was thinking about this the other day. Number one, in my mind, that is a thing for me, is dumb animal topwaters, right? Because I'm going to tell you, Yeah. I'm so sick of seeing topwaters that come out. Like, one looks like a funky chicken. You got a beaver one, right? I'm not talking about beaver bait. It's like this Berkeley bait that looks like a beaver that's a topwater now, right? We got ducks. We got chickens. We got freaking frogs. We got rhinoceroses. Rhinoceroses. I don't know. I'm sick of stupid top. The reason being is when one of these comes out, for the next 5 years, all you hear about, people will ask you, like, hey, man, do muskies really eat donkeys?
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Eddie caught a muskie on one of them donkey topwaters. No. That gets old.
Right? Do you have the new spider monkey?
Right. It's like, hey, man.
It's like, the what?
They got that 3D bat. How many muskies are eating out there eating? They're just out there chomping on bats. I know it. Mm-hmm. Taking them out there.
Not anymore with that white nose disease, Steve.
No.
Something to be concerned about.
That folks, if your local muskie's eating bats, let him know. Really?
Really?
Really. It's like, okay, we got bats. We got, oh, it's the new gopher lure from Jimmy's Gopher Baits.
There was a gopher. There is a gopher not that long ago. I know. It's best like, darn muskie pike lure ever used. Doggy Muck Tig.
Yeah, I'm freaking, yeah.
Testimonial.
Yeah, from Army Muck Tig? Is that the name?
Augie Muck Tig.
Augie? Jesus.
Go back, find a catalog 20 years ago and look at it. Look up the gopher lure. It was a funny testimonial they used in their ad. It's an inside joke. Me and Tom have it work.
Jeez Louise. I mean, I'm sitting here going, can we stop it with the dumb animal topwaters?
Oh, what else you got for me?
I'm different bucktails. That's another one. Just chaps me right in the old chappers.
You mean versions of versions of versions?
We've reinvented the bucktail. You'll lose your mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sick of it. No more. And this is my perfect world, Jay. It's going to happen. Somebody's going to come up with, we've reinvented the bucktail. It's a game changer. Right? Are you ready to bucktail like you've never bucktailed before? Well, get your bucktail down here and get a bucktail that's slightly different than every other bucktail. I'm done with it. Okay. You can't tell, right? It's just one of those things. We got 9, 10s, 10, 12, 43, 65s. You know, I like the different blade combos. That's cool. You know, I ain't mad about it, but it's just like, just
cool as heck when they work, absolutely. Yeah, most of them do really well.
Game changer.
Okay. So it's the phrase that bothers you more than anything.
We've revolutionized the bucktail.
What else you got?
Show colors. Okay.
Colors.
Of anything. Like, listen, get me going, folks. Here I go. Jay, you're placating me now. Things I want to
complain
about.
They're so good, we've got some left that wouldn't sell.
They're so good. They're only available for one weekend. You are an exclusive club of people that own 7 baits we painted in pumpkin spice. I mean, it's just like,
hey, Jay, we've got some left over. Would you be willing to buy them?
We've got leftovers because they're amazing. We only make 43 of them, but you need one now. Buy the hype, buy the hype, buy the hype, buy the hype! Get down to the Muskie Show. I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, paint me guilty. I'm sitting here. I've had quite a few here, if you can tell. Okay, so let's just talk about it. If you look at, like, I've got colors, right? I've got a Slammer color. I've got a Supernatural color. Obviously, the Titan colors. I mean, you need different colors. I get it. But if you look at, like, the ones that I've, like, done for other companies, like, these are the Steve's colors. They're black. You know? I mean, it's some variation of black. And you're like, wow, I really like this bait in black. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, the pot calling the kettle black for somebody that, like, a custom car. But, like, man, the freaking, you know, we need monkey latte. That's it, boys. If you ain't got that bait and monkey latte,
Well, I've got a few here that speaking of this whole color kind of thing that we're on, saltwater colors. Stop with the saltwater colors and musky fishing companies. Just do it because they're never good and they don't translate over.
Smelt.
And they actually scare people. I've had guys come in that were shaking with fear. That wanted to see the new blah 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 bait in a saltwater color, like redfish, Dorado, dolphin.
I'm there.
You know, come on. What about a good old fashioned yellow perch?
What about the old yellow perch, folks? On the old yellow perch.
You know, don't call it yellow skipjack. You know what I mean? Am I your way off base here?
No, I'm just there.
Thank you.
The problem is, you and I have been doing this for too long. Not the podcast, just in the musky thing, and you see it, and you see it, and you see it again, and here it is, right? And here, the new bugtail of exclusively in new black. Okay.
Well, here's another one. Colors that make no sense.
Right.
So if someone just gets our catalog and there's a listing, you know, and there's a, 25 colors listed, and half of them are undefinable, completely, like if you don't have an image to look at, I mean, you're just going to be like, what the heck is this? You know, Chunky monkey,
right?
Yeah, that's been
not
used
a real
before.
Color,
it's like,
but you know,
okay,
what is that?
I've seen someone use it before, maybe in spoon colors or something like that. But often you get these, the colors that come in, that's like, if it's a dark bait and they're, I could see calling black midnight or something like that. That's fine.
Hey,
I'm talking off
base
here.
Hey, that's what we do. Hey.
Yeah, come on.
Hey, black time called midnight. Hey, watch your mouth.
Yeah, well, good stuff.
It's
good to get it out. It's good to get it out.
Sometimes you just gotta let it go. So everybody, prepare yourself. New bucktails that are different and custom colors coming your way this year. It's up. And now for something completely different. Okay, so on the flip side, right? What awesomeness do you, what are you looking forward to this year, Jay? What do you hope happens?
Oh, there's a lot of things.
No. In fishing.
I hope it's a good season in terms of the weather this year.
Not a late ice out.
Just normal. Just give us a normal spring and watch things develop normally, and there'll be great fishing to follow. Yeah. Because it really screwed up, and I know we complained about that a few times, and a lot of people suffered through that, trying to adapt and get fish to bite when it should have been easier than it was, so that's the number one thing. I just hope, for us, the ice out is key. It's got to happen at the right time, and you just got to have a normal progression of spring warming, and boom, everything, nature will do the rest for you and set up the lakes good. So
I'm in the same boat where it's like Canada the last 2 years, it's like drought or flood. Can we just have a normal year?
Right. Yeah. They had all that extreme crap to deal with.
Normal.
Right?
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jay, are we doing Musky Thunder 2.0?
The energy drink?
I think we should.
We got to get those podcast t-shirts rolling too.
Something, busy beavers here.
Get some merch going.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I'm not worried about
it. It's January already. I mean, come on.
It blows your mind. You sit here and go, we're just really not that far out. I mean, I've got to work on summer plans and Canada and all that stuff here in a second. It's just like, whoa, you get through this week and everybody sort of normalizes them. Now you're back to, man, it's the real deal. You're getting geared up. I'll tell you, if you're an angler that's looking at Canada or looking at the North Woods or looking at a trip up north, man, do not wait until May to plan your trip. I'll tell you that much. I mean, you need to be thinking about it now and getting things lined up, which is just like crazy. But
how are restrictions in general this year for going out of the country?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I believe that it's wide open. They don't require a vaccination. However, who, you know, more on that later. Who knows? Yeah. You just okay. You just look at that stuff and you go, it could be this, it could be that. But, you know, try not to go down that road too terribly hard. You know, there's so many mitigating things there. I've seen some restrictions on international travel outside of our country, but there's some stuff going on now. So who knows? Like I said, I would just plan on it being a guessing game. So as always, yeah, I mean, it's who knows. So anyway, let's hit some Q&A here, Jay. It is. Rambled on. John, interested in thoughts on musky boat design. I fish in Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio. Southern musky fishing being year-round makes for a lot of foul weather outings. Most local people fish out of bass boats, but I'm leaning towards a tiller, open layout, multi-species V-bow. My main concern is how to figure 8 from them. Example from when I'm referring to, like a Lund Alaskan. I'd appreciate some boat design discussion. What do you guys think? Haven't heard much lately about Elmer's presidential aspirations. We're working on that. I'll tell you. Here's the deal. We don't talk politics on here, but we dabbled our toe in a joke. And you go, whoa, hello. You know, we're going to just leave the politics out of this. How about that, Jay? Even the slightest joke and no, never any offense. I'm pretty centrist.
No, there's still people talking. I had people in this week who were asking about Tom Elmer's presidential bill.
We thought that was great. We got to keep her in the middle there. You know, it's just just always a tease. But boat design. I mean, here's the deal. When it comes down to a boat, in my opinion, just like a trolling motors and boats get the biggest you can afford to buy, right? So if you can squeeze the extra X amount of dollars to get 2 more feet of boat, get it, because you're always going to want a bigger boat, right? I've got a 20 and a half or whatever it is, big old boat. And there's days I'm like, man, I wish I had more boat. You know, so that would be my first thing to mention. Now, when it comes to these deep V boats, and I've had deep V boats for a lot of years, and fished out of tons of them. If you look at even like the Ranger Fishermen and all these different boats, they're deep Vs in a lot of capacity, and they set up higher off the water. What you have to look at is if you're coming from a bass boat where you're setting pretty even, right? You're really not that elevated. You're going to need to fish longer rods or fish out of the back. So if you're a tiller guy and like, hey, I'm going to get a we're referring to like a Lund Alaskan or some of these deeper Vs.
You know, 620 Ranger or something.
Yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, whether it be an Alumacraft, whatever. Deep V, Tracker, Alumacraft, Lund. You guys know what these look like. You know what I'm talking about. If you're going to get one of these boats, you need to consider where you're going to fish from, right? And how you're going to fish it. And a lot of that becomes a matter of, for me, with fishing out of the back, if let's say I'm running a tiller and I'm fishing this tiller boat and I got to bop up front, I got to put the trolling motor down, and then I got to go back to the back of the boat, right? Well, why not fish out of the front? There's a consideration there. For me, I fish out of the front because I fish in current and run my boat backwards. So there's a consideration there. If you're fishing a lot of rivers, boat control out of the nose is way easier, and you don't go things nose down. You go at them upstream, if you will, and you slow the boat. So there's a consideration about where you're fishing. If I'm fishing typically lakes or very slow moving rivers or reservoirs, you know, a 16 footer, I mean, I've ran 16 and a half for years. Don't care. I mean, they would get through it. You're not going to have a good time in 4 footers, right? Nope. You're going to get home. That would be the top consideration. So a deeper V, in my opinion, you're going to be able to fish some foul stuff. You're going to be able to fish nastier conditions than a boat, bass boat, under most circumstances. When it comes to figuring, you're going to need to run a longer rod. If you're fishing out of the nose of a Lund or a Tracker or a Lumencraft, it sits higher off the water, right? So you're going to want to have a longer rod. So you want a 9.6. You look at a lot of the Canadian anglers, everybody that's fishing Canada. We're fishing out of boats that set up off the water for a reason. You need to handle some bigger water. So a longer rod's going to help you get that depth in your figure eight, yada, yada, yada. So you want to have that as a consideration. So if you're upgrading your boat to a boat that sits higher off the water, you need a longer rod. As far as when it comes to tiller versus console, the argument for a lot of years has been tillers are better to troll out of, right? I smack them driving a console boat, right? I got a bunch of tricks and how I got a cheater knob on my wheel, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it becomes a matter of what you're comfortable with. The thing I would say is with a tiller, there's less stuff going on, right? So the engine is controlled right there at the engine. So you're not worrying about a steering wheel. You're not worried about a throttle control that's separate. Everything's right there. So it's a little bit more simplified, right, in a positive way. So if you're worried about longevity or maintenance, tiller's going to be the way to go. The one thing, the commentary I'd make about tillers that I've found to be the negative where I've shied away from them is now we have a tiller where we have a seat by the tiller, right? And we have no rear casting deck, really, right?
In some cases, yeah.
You just, even in a Ranger, right? And Jim went with Josh at Wreck and Rack, and he had some custom boxes built to take care of this problem.
Yeah.
Because you go, I have a very nice boat, I have a lot of space, quote unquote, but I have no casting deck because I've got an open space from where here's a seat for me to sit, here's my control panel, here's my graphs, and I'm taking up X amount of space. In my opinion, for whatever it's worth, from owning both over the years, a tiller tends to take up more square footage than a console. Right? Because now we need our seat. We need our console that's off to the side instead of dead center on us. And we need our sweeping room where we can move our arm back and forth. So we have taken up, in my opinion, more square footage in the rear of the boat. So you're going to forego a rear casting deck in that capacity. So if you're fishing solo, fishing out of the nose of the boat all the time, I'm like, okay, cool, man. I'm running a tiller. I'm running a Tuffy. I'm running whatever it is, a tracker, you know, guide, whatever the heck. Okay, cool, man. Zip around. You're driving out of the back. You're throwing out of the back. You can hop up front. You've got a nice casting platform in the front. You're good. But if you're going to fish 2-3 out of that boat, I want to have that rear casting deck and that front deck because that allows me to have more space for what I'm doing the majority of the time. So if you're a caster by nature, I want to have deck space. If you're a troller, makes sense. I don't know. What do you think, Jay, when it comes to boats? What do you think?
I agree. Well, the old adage is that, you know, a lot of people have gone to tillers in the past because they want more room because they fish 3 out of the boat all the time. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point about with that gear and just that setup in the back and quite often lack of casting deck or safe casting deck.
Yeah. Little, I mean,
you don't want to be balancing on something when you're fishing. Point. You know what I mean.
Yes, we could tell a couple horror stories of people we know taking dives.
Yeah,
in the boat and out of the boat. Like, yes, continue. Sorry, preach on. But
no, that was it. That was it. I agree with that totally. You know,
you end up. I know a couple guys where they have, you know, rocking and socking deep V's that fish up north and have had some pretty nasty spills because you've got a 14 by 14 area to stand in on the edge. So you got to build that boat out to have additional casting deck in some capacity. I mean, that's just, I don't know. That's always that classic tiller versus console in my mind.
Yeah, and there's so many boats out there, and there's so many applicable boats for musky fishing, really, that could do a good job for you. You know, a friend of mine got one that's actually a crappie boat, and it's fantastic layout for musky fishing.
Right.
And but that's the thing. You know, some of these boats that, you know, functionally are awesome, not going to disrespect someone's, you know, buddy of ours, you know, west of us has a really big boat and it's like, it's not set up for casting multiple people.
No,
you know, it's really well set up for,
it's huge.
It's huge. And it's you know, for big water and a trolling application. Awesome.
Like if you,
but it's a little tricky, you know, when it comes to balancing.
For me, it's just like when we did the boat with Low, right? And Jay, you've been on it, and it's just like, I love that. It's a lot of casting deck tons of space. That was my biggest thing, is like net storage, bait storage, casting deck, because I'm primarily casting.
Every person we've ever fished with, when you've come up north over in Wisconsin here, every person has commented either during the day or when we're driving home. It's like, man, I can't believe we casted, we fished four people out of that boat all day and it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Times five.
Yeah. Five deep where you're comfortable. So, you know, if you got a buddy, I mean, to me, space, yep, make that great decision. Layout. Make that decision based on what you primarily intend to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, we fished out of Ranger bass boats, not the deep V's like the fishermen, but fished out of Ranger bass boats in Canada, right? Comanches and all this stuff, because you had that rear casting space. You had the setting area. I mean, even in my boat, which is 20 feet, it is set up right now. I have a captain seat and I have a passenger seat, right? So if I have three or four anglers on the boat, which I do regularly, they're not even in chairs, right? You're sitting on the deck. You're sitting in the front corner. You're sitting on the back deck, because I'm going to forego a place to sit way over having that casting space or additional seating. So to me, it's just like, yeah, what are you doing more? If you're sitting on your butt and you're live baiting, have some comfy chairs. If you're getting spot to spot, have casting deck. If you're a troller, have that big wide open place. You got a bunch of tackle hanging up. You got your area, yada, 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 right?
That's what you got to consider, yeah, because a lot of people never fish with more than two people in the boat.
Right, if you don't, I mean, it's just like, we went out, some of the stuff I did on Eagle this year with my buddy Tim from the Netherlands, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a Lund, I can't remember the model. I think it's a 18. Or no, it's 16. It's 16. It's a little Lund, right?
Okay.
But, you know, he had to put a area there in the back for him to, so his feet weren't hanging off. Yeah, he's a bigger dude, so he's standing in the back corner driving the tiller, and it's that same scenario where he doesn't have a lot of room in that back corner for a casting platform. So you're going to have to build that out, right? That's just something you're going to have to consider as to how that thing's orientated, where the console or the control panel is in that boat too, because I've seen boats where it's like you're sitting across from it. Now, if you're fishing off, you know, the port side of the boat and the controls are on the port, you're going to have a hard time building out a casting platform there. So that would be my consideration, but just consider, as far as a purchasing standpoint, from my mind, is the biggest boat I can afford with the biggest trolling motor. I don't care about outboard, right? I ran 60 horse outboards for a lot of years because they're great on fuel. They never break, and who cares, right? You know, I've got a big boy motor now, but you sit here and go, it doesn't matter. So I'm not worried about speed. I'm worried about trolling motor thrust, and I'm worrying about what's most applicable. If you're a big-time troller, make sure you got open deck, you got the troll, blah, 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 blah. You heard me say it already. Just take those things into consideration there. All righty, Roo. Brent, I fish solo the majority of the time. What net will cause me the least amount of stress for me and the fish? Love the podcast. Net for solo fishing, Jay.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, which reminds me of a short I sent you here, because I'm about to mention that net. But with everything, there's a caveat, right? So Jay posted of my dear friend Tim of just a swamp donkey busting out of this.
Right.
So there is a fold-out net with that really thin bag from Frabel. That's what ended up busting on him, by the way. But if you're a solo angler, those thin little net bags come through the water really fast. So that's a consideration. Now, if you're like...
Yeah.
If you're comfortable with, I need to A, maintain, B, replace the bag on my net with some semblance of regularity, right? If you're catching fish, you're going to have to replace that net. There's an advantage there. There's really thin mesh bags. You can pick up a fish super easy. There's less resistance in the water. You're not fighting it, because generally, you know, you're netting with your offhand. Right. So you're not, me being a lefty, reeling left-handed. Well, no, that's not true. So when I'm solo netting, I'm netting with my left hand and pulling up with my right hand because it's in my right hand. So it is in my stronger arm. But with that being said, I mean, maybe it's adverse JU reel right-handed. So yeah, it's in your stronger arm. I mean, but it still feels like it's a tougher thing to accomplish with those heavier nets, right?
They're more sluggish in the water. Sluggish absolutely. In the water. And they're heavier. They're just heavier.
That's what I'm trying to think of, like, conceptually. Yep. It's like...
Well, the Frable conservation net is has been a Joe Bucher favorite for years.
But you got a real... Joe on that net, the net that Joe uses on the show is a prototype, by the way. Right? So that net is that really small mesh, and it's actually built into the rim of that net, by the way. So it feeds into the net. So you know how like a lot of fish will get caught on the edge of the net?
Mm-hmm.
His net is actually inset into the rim. That's a weird net. I've used it. It's a prototype that he actually has a bunch of replacement bags for they never came out with. So that's not a straight conservation.
Mm.
So you'll see him. He'll solo scoop fish with that. He's got that really thin mesh on it, just like we're talking about from those fold out. What is that net, Jay? The folding Frable?
Stowmaster.
So the
Stowmaster. Yeah.
He's got the bag off of a Stowmaster on that thing. So he's got a super light aluminum net, like everything else is, that is not wrapped around the edge. That thing feeds into, I've never seen another net like it. Like I said, they never came out with it as a prototype. So that's it's interesting to note, but you'll see him scoop fish by himself pretty whoop, whoop, real easy. But he's got the lightest setup you could get. I mean, that's something to consider. I mean, for me, like, you know, I don't want that Drifter XL or the Clam Mega Muskie by myself. I mean, the drip, you know what I'm talking about? I know we sell both, which is like the what's the big clam? Is the Monster Muskie or XL Muskie or whatever it is?
They just switched the name of it. Yeah, it's like a Fortis Muskie. They switched the names on them.
But the it's a big net.
A big net with a big bag. Big heavy bag. And heavy, then, heavy duty.
Heavy duty. And then like
just like the heaviest Frable, but right. Colossus. I think it's still going to be called the Colossus Large Muskie, I believe. So
for me, it's a great net. We use them when we're filming. Yeah. We use it. Yeah. I guide with them sometimes. I just, you know, whatever I'm feeling squirrely. But for me, that's a big net. I don't want to do that solo. So a consideration when I'm going for a solo net, I like the teardrop shape, right? Which is what you were just saying, the Frable conservation, correct?
Yeah, it's a popular choice
that's
for solo
fishermen.
That's a
standard net. Mm-hmm. That's what's in my boat 90% of the time, right? Relatively light net in some consideration with a heavier bag. But if you're really worried about speed or you're missing fish, putting that lighter bag on there, you're going to have to maintain that net. It's funny, like my buddy Tim, I told him, I said, dude, that net's trash. Don't use that net, right? Stop using that net. Boom, fish out of it. So you gotta watch
it's PB
damage.
Too.
Huh?
And it's PB on top of it.
Yeah, that was a big fish, but you know, that's something to consider. There's always a trade-off. There's always a caveat. Like I said, that Frable conservation sort of comes somewhere right there in the middle. Another commentary I make about a net, right, is when you get a new net, you'll notice, are they tarred or waxed, Jay? Is it tar? What's on there? Tar.
Some kind of rubberized dip.
Rubberized dog dip. Man, I'm country.
Yeah, they take some break-in. There's some break-in involved.
So,
you know, they're stiff.
Heat them up. That is a little net pro tip for you, buddy. So, what I have done in the past, if you want to make your wife really mad, is take that net and put it in the dryer.
Yeah, that's an old trick.
Yeah, get it warmed up, get it limber. That is one thing, because you get the, like these nets that are like brand new and they're really stiff or you're not using a lot. I've taken old pillowcases because I'm always worried about, are they going to put the reason I asked if tar, I've had black residue left in very expensive dryers before and gotten in trouble. So stick them in something else that's gonna, if there's any residue come up in it, but keep heating them up and they'll loosen up for you quite a bit. Yep. That's an important element there, which will help with netting, help with that net to sort of have fluidity to it when it's hitting the water and when you're holding it up. The other thing I'd say on solo netting is A, have the net extended, have it ready to go, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And have the bag pulled back. So when you go to grab the handle, you're grabbing the net and the handle at once.
Yeah.
So it's pulled back, so you're not like got this net droopy in the water that the muskie can swim under.
Yeah.
That's a big factor there, which is have that prepared. And to be honest with you, practice makes perfect. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with running. And I mean, it sounds dumb and people go, well, how do you get good at stuff? Any professional, anybody, you practice things, right? You sort of drill, if you will. There's nothing wrong with taking a pounder and tying it on by the no hooks and putting it hooked to the bottom and sort of getting a feel for what you're going to do. Right. And so you've practiced where I'm going to land this fish. How do I keep him out of the trolling motor? When I go to net this fish, am I is there a possibility that my net's going to get stuck in a cleat or, the area that I'm primarily intending to net muskies in? Are there generally baits laying on the floor that are going to get hooked to the bottom of the bag? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, ahead. Go, I'm a solo angler and I fish out of the front of the boat. And the front of my boat is generally covered in, I'm just making shit up here, but. The front of my boat is generally covered in lures and I fish out of the front. Now I'm going to net this fish and they're going to be a big old mess. Right. Think ahead, sort of plan your steps there. That would be my comment. Wes, can you give me some tips on how to fish reefs? I fish Canada with regularity and don't feel confident on how to approach reefs and also rocky points. The shield lake sort of have a bunch of reefs and rocky points, and I'm not picking up as many fish as I think that are there. Good question. Love it. Reefs are highly productive in Canada, but often approached incorrectly, which is you've got to take it twofold. What's going on with the wind and the wave action, right? Number one. And where are the predominant high spots on that thing? So I'm only focusing on reefs that sort of play to the strong hand that day. Like, okay, the dominant spot on this reef is X, Y, and Z, and the wind's hitting in such a way that'll be productive. So you need to consider that like when you're sort of thinking about them structurally. But what I'm looking to do is play the windy side, right, to the best of my ability, which is before spot lock was tough, right? But whatever side the water is hitting, the wind is hitting, the waves are hitting, seems to be the more productive side. And if that is the higher side or the more obtuse side, if you will, of that reef, that's going to be even better. So what I like to do is use spot lock now. Before I was using anchors and it was tough. But what I want to do is hold off that reef on the deep edge and bomb casts in there, right? Bomb into that area, work them out. And saturation cast it to the best of my ability and then move sideways. I don't want to move tighter into the reef. I want to work the perimeter, right? And then working in tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. But what you'll see is a lot of guys will try to get on the safer side, the easier side to fish, the slack side of the wind, and it's less productive. You've got to get in the nasty stuff to really make those play to your strong suit.
Another, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, sometimes you can set up off of them to the side, right? You can run where you're throwing off the side of the boat and it's hitting in there. I don't know if it matters as much as like what angle the bait's coming from per se in that, but you need to be fishing the nasty side of those. I think points are the same way. You know, if you've got a windblown point or you've got there's a lot of wave action on a point, you're going to have to spot lock. You're going to have to anchor if you don't have spot lock to effectively fish that, right? That's one of the few scenarios where I like to bomb cast because it tells me quickly, in some regard, like if I'm throwing it out there, I'm bombing it near the edge of the reef or near the edge of the point, and I'm getting hit real quick, right? Obviously, they're tight. Okay. If I'm getting follows to the boat, yes, they could have followed me all the way from that, but I'm looking at where the hit came from.
Yeah, right, right.
Right. And the more hits I'm getting tied in, the tighter I just go ahead and just call it a day and just get in there nasty. You got to be smart. I know of a lot of guys that have messed their boats up and their trolling motors on some of these reefs. I would say the most important thing or the smartest thing you can do is strategically scope these things out. If you do not understand how that reef is laid out, go around it one or two times to have a concept of where the high spots are, the dangerous spots are before you just go trudging in there. That's another commentary, which is if you know, okay, there's boulders on the backside. I'm thinking one reef where Jay, you would go on the outside of it and you would think it was just like this nice circular reef and you go around the corner of that thing. There's boulders the size of houses 6 inches under, right?
Which you can't see because you're on the windy. Yeah. You know,
so scope it out first, just lay the rod down 10 minutes of your life and go, okay, this is there. This is there. Okay. Now I can at least feel more confident if I'm a cast off this that I'm not worried about boat control, right? And now we're focused on spot locking, we're focused on hitting the important spots, because I see a lot of guys that come into reef, they fish it one time a year and they're fishing it way too far off out of fear, or they're fishing it incorrectly because they're fishing in a dicey manner. And like I said, the litany of people I know, the book, I ripped my trolling motor off on Eagle. Well, yeah, you're playing the wind side of that thing. And of course, the wind's blowing into it. And if you don't know, there's a freaking, you know, a rock shelf that's going to come up out of nowhere. Boom, immediately you're in trouble. So do your homework on the reefs. And like I said, when you're driving up to them, whether it be a point or anything, watching that point, you're looking, obviously we're driving into it on our map. And then we're looking at it with our own eyes. And we're going, okay, which way is the wind blowing? Make sure when you're driving into that spot, you're setting your boat up for success. I've seen guys do it where they're going to fish the windy side and they drive up to they drive up 100 yards down and they're fighting to just get forward, right? Be smart about how you're approaching the spot in general, right? So by the time I get my trolling motor down, I get my rod picked up, I got my bait strapped up and I'm good to go, that I'm drifting into this thing the way I want to, right? So play the wind, play the waves, which angle that they're going at. You know, like I said, a million times I've put everybody in the back of the boat and you're spot looking out of the nose and just let that thing work in, you know, rear of the boat first. And just have it ready to go. A trick that I'll do if it's really bad or it's really gnarly, I'm hitting it, especially like just open water reefs, I'll leave the big engine on, just put it in neutral, right? So if it gets dicey or we're getting blown around or, you know, I can just pop that thing and smooch us forward a little bit, because it seems like in those big, heavy blows, those can be some of the most productive spots. But like I said, either it scares people,
sure,
or they're approached incorrectly. Just having that in your head where exactly that stuff is, where I'll tell you, if you've never gone to Canada, you're taking your boat for the first time, man, that first day, understand the spots. I mean, it's just the familiarity with a reef. I'm thinking about these multiple reefs in my head, how I approach them. Familiarity, yeah, with those spots is so important. So having that under your belt's going to do you a lot of good. Jesse.
Yes, sir.
What's the deal on line? Does the brand of the line that I use matter? If everything's 80-pound test, right, and it actually has the same breaking point, what is the purpose of fishing more expensive braids like Suffolk and Cortland versus budget braids like Mason and some of the offerings available online? Is it a you get what you pay for scenario? Is there a benefit between the different lines? What do you think, Jay?
Well, I use Cortland Master Braid on quite a few of my reels right now. That's what I've been running, 80-pound Master Braid.
You know, the cost difference isn't that much really between brands. I mean, they're all kind of in the ballpark, but you know, it might be, you know, $5 difference here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Power Pro is super. The difference between Power Pro, the difference in diameter and feel between 80-pound Power Pro, which is probably the best-selling line on the market for Muskie all around, and Cortland Masterbraid, say, is there's a different feel to the line, there's a different texture,
mm-hmm.
and Cortland's a little bit thicker. And if that's a concern to you, go to 65. You know, if you want a super thin line, still got a high break strength, but there's different technologies in how they process that stuff, how it's weaved and everything, you know.
Well,
but it's all that, like, that Dyneema type Spectra fiber. Mm-hmm. So it's all, you know, it's like fishing rods. They all, you know, pretty much are using, you know, some degree of carbon fiber in them.
For me, I fish some really coarse stuff. Like, if you ever fish Beast Braid, it's very coarse, right?
Uh-huh.
And Suffix is very smooth, and I'm not saying in smooth and casting, I'm saying in tactile feel. It's in your hand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the difference in casting distance is so negligible, and I'm not a bomb caster, really. We're just talking about reefs. That's about the only time I'm like, well, okay, bomb it in. And well, I don't think you're going to pick up or lose too terribly much. I mean,
no, and you just said smooth, and it's just like, if you think about it, the really smooth lines on the market have like a coating on them that is designed to come off.
Right.
Because if you've ever spooled a line with an industrial line spooler, you know, you've had to run your line along it to make sure that it evenly goes along the roller and lays evenly on the spool. And some lines leave, I mean, literally you got to use soap and water, you know, warm water to get it all off. There's a big amount of dye. Yeah. Because of that coating on there.
Yeah.
And there's a break-in period. Others don't have, like, I think Cortland Masterbraid doesn't really need that much of a break-in period compared to some others that, you know, the more you use it, the more coating comes off, and then it's less smooth after that because there's the, you know, the weave underneath that of the actual line.
All right. I don't know. I mean,
no,
there's one.
If you've got a line that you love and you're happy with, stick with it.
I mean, there's,
you know, if it works for you, you're not having problems with it, great.
I mean, for me, I mean, there's a couple brands I won't fish just because of, like, break-offs. And I'm not talking fish break-offs. I'm, like, just talking mid-air baits, right? Because you can get good line, bad line. You know what I'm talking about. But, I mean, I don't see that. If I was going bottom barrel, right, whatever the cheapest line we sell is versus the most expensive line, I don't know if there's a massive benefit. Right? Maybe a confidence thing. Maybe it's a tactile thing. Like I said, Beast Braid, pretty coarse line, right? You feel it on your thumb, you go, that stuff's got some chew to it, if you will, right? Where some of these other lines are smooth, but at a certain point, I don't know if there's this. The price jump's not that big, and I think that's what you're getting at, Jay. Like, the difference between a premium line and a budget line is not that big of a price jump, and also, too, the quality is not that massive of a price jump, right?
Well, the price is all the same if you have it spooled at the shop.
Right.
I mean, it's literally the same.
It's the same, right.
Tons of bulk line, yeah, so forget that idea.
Right, but if you're buying, you know, typical spools that people do at home, I mean...
Right. I understand, yeah.
I mean, for me, it's find something you like. I would say the biggest thing for me, and I don't think about line too terribly much, other than longevity and how easy it is to tie a knot, right? Some of the coarser stuff is not the quickest knot tying, and some of the smoother stuff, you know, it's not that much different. We're crawling in the minutia of it, but, you know, for me, it's just like, I like Suffix. That's been one of my favorites for a long time. I trust it and I feel comfortable with it. Right now, on the other hand though, is Jim Stewart turned me on to J Braid. So I'm running J Braid too. And I feel exactly the same. So you know, once you catch some fish on it, I think you go, I'm sticking with this because I know it. You
know? Yeah. It's just like, well, another thing is line color too. You know, that's been a subject of discussion lately.
Oh, hell.
With these high vis things, you know, and it's like with certain baits, it's kind of cool, you know, if you're a line watcher, mm-hmm. To have high vis, because traditionally, you know, musky lines for years Green. And years yeah. have been the blend in color,
right?
Moss green being number one. Number one, you know, there's some tan line on that, brought, yeah. But, you know, the high vis stuff like pure white or sky blue or something like that, yeah. Or they've got some, again, back to these crazy color names.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
So, somebody's got like, you know, Arctic Monkey Sapphire or something
oh,
like
dude,
that.
Oh, dude, I've fished plenty of, and you can see it on the show too, tons of the like super bright neon green.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
In the white, I believe. I think when we were fishing on Three Lakes with Josh, I was fishing white J-braid I put on like that day.
Some people get really nervous around, you know, they want the line to blend in, but it's like, hey, when that stuff came out, all I was using was light line. I was using Tough Line Plus when it came out.
That's all you had, yeah.
And it worked great. Got tons of fish on it.
Just go with, I mean, I would just focus on what you're confident with. I mean, if you tie a knot and it sticks and it doesn't budge and you can sort of get snagged and drag your boat over to it, I think you're good. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like, yep. if you're pulling up a tree stump, you're good. You're good. Mm-hmm. It won't matter. Sam, when should I focus on ticking and clicking crankbaits? What do you think, Jay? Is it a cold front thing? What would you say? I think it works.
Ticking and clicking.
Yeah, like a Booker thing. You're ticking and clicking. I think it's a year-round thing, just making contact, really.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think so. You know, that's the number one thing you want to do with those things, make contact, you know.
I think rocks, reeds, I mean, whether you're hitting weeds and letting them float up so you don't get snagged in them or
because if you're ticking and clicking, you're putting in some kind of pause and slow rise
right.
every once in a while. So and which maybe it's not the actual ticking and clicking, but in by doing that, you're promoting this
non-straight retrieve.
Erratic.
Yeah.
Yes, the erratic yeah. nature of it is obviously things triggering mechanism.
I mean, it's just a good. If you're having a hard time, okay, so where I go with like a, whether it be the Titan or a shallow raider, fishing rocks, fishing cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the bucktails in the topwater are not working on my faster presentation, I'm going to do that contact and stop. Contact, stop. Whether it be diving rods, whether it be a minnow bait. That's that first move, especially a cold front as well. When we talk about, or Joe loves to talk about, baits that suspend or slow or rise or neutral buoyancy. It's to keep that bait in that zone, right? So you're ripping it down, you're twitching, you're ticking, you're clicking per se. That's going to be beneficial anytime that conditions are not good, right? You're in a cold front, you've got negative or neutral fish, or your traditional presentations are not paying off. So there's never a bad time for that presentation. Now, their application might be shallow in the summer, and we could be doing the same stuff with depth raiders, right? In the winter, or a heavy weighted Titan, and you're ripping it down, just let it deathly slow rise. So conceptually, that's always a good thing to be doing, right? You want to apply that as often as possible when things are not really going your way. The same thing could be said with like small downsizing gliders, though, with a lot of hang time and a lot of pause, right? I think a lot of that methodology, like you said, Jay, you're alluding to, is keeping things triggering, keeping things accessible to fish that are not quite hot, right? The same yeah. thing when we're trolling. Right. You know, we're trolling depth raiders along some contour line or some deep edge, whatever it might be, you know. You make contact with something and you slow the boat down, boom. So, you know, when you need to get down and dirty, it's always a good concept. Aaron, I'm planning on attending the Musky Shot Bash. I could use some recommendations on what are good lakes to target in that area. And do you need a big boat to fish for muskies in the North Woods? Jay, that sounds like a Jay question to me. What are some good lakes to target in that area? And do you need a big boat?
You do not need a big boat.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, a big lake in Byles or Oneida County up here in north central Wisconsin is 3,000 acres. That's as big as they get. So a lot of lakes around here are, you know, 300, 600, mm-hmm. something like that, acres, you know, not too bad. So unless it's a really rough day, small boats, no problem. Plus,
dude,
you know,
if it's a really rough day, situation. You can find some smaller water, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find them. Look on the map, you know, and all the free stuff that DNR has to offer on their website, you know, with maps and boat landing access points and all that and difficulty, you know, whether it's improved, whether it has concrete slab or not, you know. You know, if you got a car topper or a small boat and four-wheel drive, you know, that keeps the big rangers off of it because they don't want to mess with, you know, a shallow landing or just something that's you know, not a solid landing. And it's like mm-hmm. lakes like that are golden, man.
Gold those mines. Could
be the most fun, you know.
All right.
So, yeah, there's a million lakes. I mean, stop into the shop. I mean, they're, you know, I don't like naming small lakes, but, you know, the popular lakes right around the Muskie Shop area in the Minocqua, Wisconsin area. You know, Lake Tomahawk, mm-hmm. Lake Minocqua, Quagasaga, Big Arborvitae, Squirrel, Big St. Germain. The mm-hmm. list goes on and on. There's a ton of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many options there. And like you said, mm-hmm. dude, coming in the shop, grab Jay when you get up there or call ahead of time. And that's the thing is, yeah, you definitely, I mean, you could fish. There's so many lakes up there. You could fish out of a John boat.
Yeah.
You could fish out of a kayak, most of them.
Yeah, we got, you know, and there's river systems around too, and there's really small, not, what would you say those are, Steve? Not really, I wouldn't call them river systems, almost like large feeder creeks, system, you know, that, you know, just ask the Smitties at the Bash if you come, you know, about that. They've had some really fun trips on their days off where they go, I've talked about this before, but they go, you know, like the headwaters of Wisconsin River and mm-hmm. you know, Tomahawk River, something like that goes into Minocqua, just some really cool small bodies of water that you might have to, you know, duck down really low to get under a few tree branches every once in a while. And, you know, a lot of shallower sections where a John boat, it's just like, man, you're going to find some cool fishing at times on those bodies because no one's going to bother doing that or very few people will ever. Yeah. Bother trying to deal with it, you know?
No, and man, we like getting on the, like when we're filming for Muskie Shop TV, we love to get on some of the offbeat stuff, you know, that's not really heavily hit. I mean, because mm-hmm. there's so many options. And
that's
cool thing. I think that's the coolest thing up there is like, you know, I wouldn't, let's say you got a 14-foot John boat, right? And a trolling motor. There are lakes you can go and really cover a whole lake that has 50-inch fish in a John boat up there. That's the cool thing. You don't have to like roll up and be a ranger owner and be rigged up. It's not Canada. You know, it's not in Minnesota. There's not a lot of, you know, as far as the common knowledge of Minnesota, there's a lot of big water, right? And Canada's a lot of big water. That Northwoods area, there's a lot of small water where you can be really effective in a small boat, which is nice. And I think that's why it attracts so many people, too, because you go, the fishing's great. There's tons of muskies, and it's safe and it's small. So, yeah, you're coming to the Bash. If you're bringing a small boat, you're going to be great. I mean, I think Primo, I think if you are a buddy, man, a 16-foot like little boat up there, like a deep 16-foot tracker or a Lund, man, you could fish anything.
You pretty know. Much. There is literally 100 good musky lakes within like a 45-minute drive of the musky shop.
Of tons of
it's
stuff.
So cool.
I don't, like I said, I you could fish the majority of it out of a John boat. You could fish all of it out of a small deep V, and anything bigger than that, you ain't gonna feel a bump.
Well, we had some guys who came up last year for the Bash that brought some small boats, and they towed them all the way from, you know, out east. And so they had a riot. They came up for a week, and they lake hopped every day, and we saw them out on one lake. We were out there with...
Yeah, we did see his Ricky Bobo we saw.
Ricky Bobo. Yep. He was one of them, with his buddy. And
they were in a small little boat. They were tearing them up. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of opportunities. So anyway, if you're planning coming to the Bash July 15th, Minocqua, Wisconsin... Bring your boat or bring a pool floaty. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, don't be afraid to ask me or one of the guys,
call the shop.
You know, we'll be happy to mark a map if we've been on the water and are familiar with something that you're curious about. And,
Fred will show
try
you.
To help you out anyway.
Fred will show you.
Fred will show you his favorite spot.
Take you to the musky shop.
Top waters ain't. Oh, go plop plop plop.
Yeah.
I forgot that song.
Fred will show you his favorite spot. Anyway, Fred.
Good times.
Fred
good
hates that. Fred. Anyway, yeah, that we're gonna have a hoot. Looking forward to it, guys. Anyway, Jay, next week we're doing the big stuff. I don't even know what we're doing, but I'm just being.
Are nutty. We? We're going doing the big nutty. Stuff. I don't know what it
next,
is. But
tune in next week for the big stuff. All right, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Night, guys. Thank
Happy
you.
Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks.
Happy
for
New Year.
Later.
Choo-choo.
Welcome to the crazy train. You've never seen magic like mine that can bless a shield ride. I am the Titan Master.